outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
I never dreamed we would get here, and as it's approached, I've kind of thought, what are we going to do about that one? Number six.
Six.
We're there.
It's podcast 666.
This is podcast number 666.
This has to be about Satan and the Antichrist, then.
Well, it can be. This really...
I don't like him.
Or we could just skip it, you know, like they do in hotels where you go from...
No room 13, floor. No 13th floor.
Yeah, don't do it, because what?
No one wants to be on that one.
That's
in
weird, isn't it?
13.
Isn't that weird for really adults to go, you can't be on a 13th floor because then something bad would happen when, you know, people get murdered on the 14th floor or the 16th floor.
I don't know the answer. I don't know if you do. Where did 13 become a bad thing?
I don't know the answer to that. I know where 666 became a bad thing. You could ask me about that. I have no idea why 13.
Is it the number behind your ear?
Maybe
that's
the number behind my ear, 13? Or 666. Behind my ear?
I'm just checking.
You can check. No, I'm pretty sure it's not there.
Okay, that's good.
You know, the thing is, I can't check behind my ear. I can't check.
You can't check?
Somebody tattooed me in the middle of the night. Maybe I...
You would know.
If a needle touches my body, I know.
You'd know, yeah. You're not...
When I have my heart surgery. No, heart surgery. I'm out.
Heart surgery.
They're poking all kinds of stuff.
Oh, my God.
They're poking knives in my chest.
They must have poked you in a little pattern.
On my chest? 666?
I don't know, behind your ear.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
You've seen something there, or are you just making
I'm just
fun?
Wondering.
No, it's not there.
Maybe you didn't wash.
I think Sarah would tell me.
Okay.
You know, I bet she would. Back here.
Yeah, I do remember the day she thought you were.
Till I was the Antichrist? I don't think of that. I don't think that's true.
So what do we do with the fact that this is 666? You're going to number it? You're not just going to skip it?
Yeah, I feel like 666, like I feel like 2019 or 2018. It's just another number, dude.
Okay.
But if anybody comes to me and says, you know what, you can't buy anything without 666 tattooed on your forehead, I might pretty much be suspicious something's going on.
I think Jeff Field is going to probably tape this, play it backwards at double speed or something. Or
Jeff Fields is going to do this? You're attacking poor Jeff?
No, I'm not attacking. I'm just thinking he would be the one person to find the backward masking.
I think he plays every podcast backwards. Something valuable.
He did send us one of those slow it down ones.
Yeah, they're always funny. Sounds drunk. you always sound drunk to me anyway at full speed. So I don't.
Nice.
Yeah, no problem.
Yes, that's my golden life.
Well, I saw this article a while back. Maybe it's kind of this is in Christianity Today. My goodness, I don't remember when.
Could
it
be
was.
A 666 from Christianity
could
Today.
Could be a problem. But anyway, this was the title of the article caught my eye. It says, "Good news: Satan wants to destroy you."
Hey,
good news.
Good news.
And the point of the article is, most of us tend to forget that we have a real and present enemy warring against us. We read those stories of Jesus casting out demons and all that stuff, and we go, oh, my gosh, yeah, there's some freaky dudes in the world. And then we forget that not only is there God who's loving us and wanting to win us into his life, and not only is there broken humanity that seems to be a constant distraction to
Minions.
Then it's also the power of darkness. There is a presence of evil in the world, whether it's Satan or demonic hosts or whatever. And I think people tend to forget as they go about life when it feels like, this is a war. Doggone it. I just feel like everything's against me. Well, in a temporal sense, there is a lot arrayed against you.
There is truth to that.
Drag you into the darkness that wants to. So anyway, he wrote this article to remind people, hey, when it feels like you've got an enemy.
Maybe you do.
You do.
No, nice.
And it probably isn't Satan. I think, you know, Satan's not.
As in Satan himself?
Yeah, Satan's not omnipresent like God
and
Jesus.
It means adversary.
Yeah, he's an adversary and there's lots of adversaries and
it just might be a little s, not a big s.
So little s, not a big s. That's
well,
hilarious.
No, I mean.
Satan may be a metaphor for...
It is bizarre that we would take Satan and we would then capitalize it.
That is bizarre?
Why do we do that?
It's in the Bible that way.
I don't know that it was.
Originally. Oh, it's not in the Greek. Greek doesn't have capital letters.
I know, which is why I go like, why did some publisher, editor guy decide to go like, you know, I'm going to capitalize that.
Well, there's always been a sense that there, even those demonic forces in the world, that there's one big general of that whole army.
I get that. His name's Lucifer.
And Jesus talked to him, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
And so Satan became Lucifer and whatever.
Yeah. You know, I get that. But I think, sadly, what that's done is it's made us a little bit blind to perhaps the point of this article that I have not read.
I'm about to read
okay,
it.
Okay, please.
No, I'm kidding.
Please.
No, go ahead. Make your point.
No, but I do think that when we kind of make a – I think Satan's a rat with a flashlight.
A rat with a flashlight?
Yeah. He okay. shines it on himself because he's a total selfie guy. And the shadow he casts on the wall is much bigger than he really is.
You know, even without the shadow on a wall, if I wake up in the middle of the night and there's a rat with a flashlight holding it in its face, I'm going to be a little freaked out.
Yeah, it's going to bug you.
Yeah, I am.
But I think if you saw his shadow on the wall, you'd be even more freaked out. And I think fear has a way of doing that stuff to us. It's like, you know, we're quoted in the Bible, you and me. And
we're quoted
else.
What?
We're quoted in the Bible.
Who's we?
The redeemed.
Okay.
Isaiah 14.
Yes.
It says we're up in heaven. We're looking at this guy, capital S, little s, whatever his Lucifer name is.
Yeah.
We look upon him, and the company of the redeemed says, is that the one who, you know, deceived the nations, who terrified us?
Yeah.
You just go like, but we're saying it with a measure of shock, like, oh, you got to be kidding. I let him do that? And we say it with a realization like, oh, dang, I wish I had known then what I know there. And I'm going like, well, you can. Because if you and I are quoted and we're saying that, I'm going like, well, then he's a rat with a flashlight. I don't have to be quite as frightened of him as – except when you talk about, oh, Satan to his devil, I think we make the devil bigger than he is.
No, I'm sure we do that. Sure.
I don't think that's helpful.
No.
You could write that down. That's my turn to have revelation right there.
2019 podcast number 666. Brad has a revelation.
Yes.
We have to wait till 666. Yeah. So now we're waiting for 1320 something rather.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, he just says first four things that would keep us focused. This is who is this guy? This is Derek Rishmawi. He's a doctoral candidate. Trinity Evangelical.
Quoted in
Christianity.
What's his last name?
I don't want to try and go there again.
You're speaking as I'll get the interpretation.
Don't make me go there again. He says, first, our enemy whispers lies about everything, especially about God.
Yeah, he does.
So not every thought in your head is you doubting. That's what people always think. Oh, I'm a doubter. No, maybe somebody's lying to you.
Yeah.
Maybe you can do what Peter said to do. Humble yourself under God and resist the devil. Resist the lies. He will flee from
you. And the rat runs away.
He will run away. So, yeah. And I like that. I like that humility. I've been reading a lot in the Old Testament lately. I'm reading Isaiah and reading in Psalms. Yeah, I'm being more spiritual these days. What I've noticed is how much God abhors arrogance. It just keeps coming up over and over again. At least David and Isaiah don't like it, but they're quoting God a few times. He's not a real fan either. And then when Peter says it's humility, when you can humble yourself, when you don't think you're the center of the world and don't think you've got it all, when you humble yourself under God, just realize, hey, he's my master, my king, my Lord, he's everything. That's where the real power to resist the enemy comes from. It's not the arrogance. I'm tougher than the devil. He's a rat with a flashlight.
And I think a lot of people have not so helpful definitions of humility. What is it?
What is humility?
Yeah. You're reading about it. What do you toss out some other things that help describe what you're seeing?
What I see when I talk about humility is it kind of goes back to what a Greek professor told me about the word for meekness.
Ooh.
What's that? The Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. He said the word picture of meekness in the Greek is a war horse at rest.
Uh-huh. That's good.
I love that.
I like that. It's very good.
It's not, oh, I'm a mousy little, no good for nothing, whatever. Humility is just, I am who God's called me to be. I can live inside that space, but I don't have to bluster around and be arrogant and pushy and all those disgusting things.
But when Jesus says, learn of me, for I am meek and humble, he used two words there.
Hmm.
It's So I appreciate meekness, and I really love that, and I do think they're very closely associated. I think they're different.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just
you're
otherwise.
You're not going to give me. You're just going to say they're different and leave it right there. How do you see humble?
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that I don't see it in the context of what. Because I'm just like, yeah. Most of us, meekness is not a word in our culture. No one says, oh, I just want to be meek. Nobody's doing it. And I'm like, that's really bizarre that Jesus says, come learn of me. And the two things he gives you is meekness and humility. He's like, that's not on anybody's list of going like, oh, that's what I want to grow in.
Right.
And most people, it's like asking for patience. Most people are like, I don't want to ask for patience because I don't want to go through what I need to do to get there. And so they have these weird ideas of patience, and they make jokes about it as opposed to really understanding, like, you know, through faith and patience, we inherit the promises. It doesn't just say through faith. It's like if patience ain't part of it. And so that would be a good one to learn too.
Okay. From humility to meekness to humility, not a patience.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the three things that don't make most people's list. Okay?
Right, okay.
I think humility is simple agreement with God.
You think that's all it is?
No. Okay. I'm saying that's just as your war horse would describe meekness. I end up going like, humility is simple agreement. Most of the time, people think of humility, I got to think less than what I am. And so they take those weird kind of...
Well, humility based on a lie is not going to be humility, right?
Right.
I think it's not just... What did you say? Believing the same thing as God or saying the same thing?
Simple agreement with God.
Agreement with God?
If God says you're awesome, what does the humble guy say?
He could say I'm awesome.
Because God said it, not because I'm boasting in it.
Right, but he would say it in a very different way, wouldn't he? It wouldn't be, yeah, I'm awesome.
Yeah.
It would be, man, God's made me awesome.
Yeah, I was very humble and meek. I like that.
Humble and meek. See, they're very much related.
Yeah, I know.
We're trying to talk about the devil here. You can't get lost.
I don't really want to talk a whole lot about the devil.
We got four more points. Let's get him in. Second, Satan also whispers temptations to those of us who wander along blithely unaware that sin is crouching at our door.
Blithely?
Blithely.
That's an SAT word.
It's one of the top kind of words. a humble person wouldn't use that kind of word. But a doctoral candidate probably might.
Nice.
So there's lies, there's temptations. That's not, I think people blame themselves for a lot of stuff the devil's doing around. That's the point of the article, really.
Wow.
Instead of going, hold it, that's not me, that's temptation.
The devil made me do it?
Not made me do it, the devil's
the
provided
devil
the opportunity.
The devil offered it to me and I agreed.
And he drew a circle around it, put a spotlight on
and
it.
And helped me focus on it.
Don't you want this? Yeah, he does that.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, many of us are beaten down by shame, feeling defeated by the same old sins, or even horrified at the dark thoughts that can cross out in our minds. Can cross our minds. Oh, not out. I underlined here. It's hard to read. So that's kind of the same thing, I think. The second, it's temptations and then badgering us with shame, which I think
that's a big one.
It's a big one.
Because as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. If I start agreeing with the way he is heaping shame upon me, it's hard to change. I get stuck.
Wouldn't that?
Yeah. I feel condemned. I feel separated from the one who loves me. Yes. Not because I am, but I feel like, because the lies is, he can't love you. Look what you're doing.
Yep.
And so shame is nasty because it sort of makes me walk into the closet, close the door, lock it.
Yeah, one of the illustrations I've used with this in the past is like if somebody holds a gun to your head and you're convinced it's loaded, you'll do anything they'll tell you to do, pretty much, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the most part. If you knew that was a water gun, if somebody held a water pistol to you, it may look like a real gun, but right. It's just a water pistol. It has no power whatsoever.
Right.
And that whole Colossians 2 about Jesus defanging Satan at the cross, disarming. Yeah. And I think if we knew that, if we knew the lie was from Satan, and just the fact that it's coming from him says it's a lie. Like, I don't have to go, I wonder if he's lying to me. That's right. What he does. He just lies about everything. And if you knew it was a lie from the start, you would go, I'm not going to go down that road.
Right.
That's just not worth going down. And the last one, so we can get done and get on to other things. Finally, our enemy whispers accusations. Much of the condemnation and guilt we live with is not the holy conviction of God, but is instead the work of the accuser.
But he doesn't just accuse me. He accuses you. He accuses God. He accuses everybody.
Yeah.
But he can send relationships sideways pretty easily. And most of us, sadly, are very accusable.
Not only are we accusable, I've noticed where you see relationships are destroyed, the accusations are never about the event. It's motives behind. Motives people can't know.
Yes!
Not even your own, much
ladies
less someone else's.
Revelatory point
five. I do think most of, as I've kind of been more tuned into this in more recent years in my own journey, I realize how much accusation is behind what we call fellowship. And
oh, explain.
Being honest and confrontive is really you just mimicking Satan's words to people. You're condemning them even more.
I'm just being, honest with you.
Yeah, just being, you know, being accountable, and I'm holding you to account. But it really is a focus on people's weak spots. It's accusatory. And it almost always goes to motives where there is no defense. Even if you say, gosh, that wasn't my motive. Even Paul says, I'm not even sure what all my motives are. I'm not. So I'm going to let God
be the judge of himself.
Yeah. But it's easier, I think, when we talk about people listening to God, if they hear something in their heart about, you don't read the Bible enough and you don't evangelize enough, they'll put that on God because that feels true. And they go down that dark road of accusation.
It might be true.
But the accusation
is not helpful.
Is never helpful.
Yeah.
That's why I look for, in my engagements with people, if somebody wants to point out something in my life that maybe Jesus wants to work on, some blind spot uh-huh. I have, the people that get through to me are people who don't come with the accusation. They'll just come with the observation and the concern and a question. And they just come and say, you know, Wayne, I've been thinking about this.
A lot of people think they're doing that.
But a lot of people just come, you know what God showed me about you? And then they're down this angry, and accusations almost always carry anger with it. They don't ever just come graciously. Hey, you know what? I think the accusations.
But it's not, I mean, there's the capacity for such religious veneer.
To accusations?
Yeah, to the Absolutely. Point, to the fault finding and pointing that out of others. I end up going like, that's not a ministry God has ever commended.
Mm-mm.
But there's a lot of people who, in the name of God, seem to be very good at it.
Well, I think they've gone into the Greek, and they see that word admonishing means actually in the Greek to accuse. And they've just gone down that road because that's the only word in terms of our relationships to each other that has that mark on it, the admonishing, which just means, you know, bringing the truth into someone's experience is kind of lost in a place of believing something isn't true.
Okay, so.
But you're right. I think most of our religious relationships are laced with accusation in the name of helping somebody. I'm just trying to help you.
I know. And that's where I just end up going like, okay, wait a minute. If most of that, when we do that to each other, has the negative, destructive effect, then somehow this admonishment of speaking the truth in love, we're getting that wrong.
Absolutely.
So unpack that a little bit. What does it mean to, quote, speak the truth in love? Because there's a lot of people just let that roll off as, though, oh, cool, of course that's what I'm doing. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm feeling. And I can confess I've grown up as a defensive young man. I don't enjoy criticism. I don't biblically interpret it as love and discipline. I just don't.
You don't value the corrections of a friend?
I'm learning to, but I don't think I've ever please, thank you. I don't, that's not my instinct response. My instinct response is to defend myself and just, I hate being misunderstood. I don't know if anyone out there is ever at all like that, but I don't like being misunderstood.
Well, no one does. But an accusation wouldn't be a misunderstanding.
A lot out of much misunderstanding comes an awful lot of capacity for accusation.
I just had that email with somebody who was just like accusing, and I said, hold on a minute. Could this just be a misunderstanding? And the other one, hell no, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, well, I can't have much of a conversation there. Because I definitely see there's a lot of misunderstandings between people. You say one thing, somebody hears it differently, get offended, and you go. Now, if I've really said something to offend you, I'm happy to own it. I'm not out in the world trying to offend, but occasionally my...
Sometimes you do.
My words are... What?
Sometimes you're happy to.
Happy to offend somebody?
I'm not. Pharisees you go after.
Not in the room with them. No, I'm not looking to offend them.
No, you are someone that likes to sort of expose the emptiness of religion. And so.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing.
No, I'm not accusing yeah, you here.
I believe
brother.
You are. And this 666 is the last podcast.
Nice. Okay, well,
it's been fun.
I think it's time to go now. This one's early. No, in the context of trying to shine light, we sometimes can say things that are true that can wound, and that's not necessarily bad or wrong, but then there's times that we can cross that line. So, I mean, the whole idea of keeping that speaking the truth in love intention, put some context on that. How do we really do that?
Oh, I'm just reacting to the, you really enjoy hurting somebody.
I don't know that I said exactly that.
What I enjoy doing is people who are lost in a lie or lost in a priority that's religiously skewed, seeing the smoke and mirrors behind that. Right. I do enjoy that. I don't enjoy the impact that has on the guy running the smoke and mirrors.
He gets angry.
Yeah. Well, I've met them too. Yeah. I get those emails yeah. as well. You're welcome to look at those too. But to me, speaking the truth in love, and I mean, gosh, we can both unpack it together. To me, it just means getting to what's true, not what I think is right, which is very different than what's true, right?
Uh-huh.
Because if I'm trying to help somebody see more clearly than they see, I certainly don't want to offer them my darkness as light. Right,
that's which we rarely understand that we're doing
in the moment. Yeah, but it's a matter of what's true. What reorients the heart on what's true about God uh-huh. and life and the situation. And sometimes just to ask a question, but to do it in a loving way. Love doesn't accuse. Love doesn't belittle the person. Love is, man, I really care. I just want you to kind of understand this. It's not doing it for the selfish motive of I'm trying to better my lot uh-huh. by exposing you or whatever. I just love it. Out of affection, I want to help you see something that's true.
Right.
And I always say, you know, when people talk about the gifts of ministry, pastor, teacher, prophet, all that stuff, right. I say, you'll know a gift when it's a gift. If somebody gives you a snake in a box, it's not a gift. Yeah, snake in a box is not a gift.
Yeah.
They may say it is, but it's not. So a gift is somebody that, you know, it's helped them see something bigger than themselves.
Don't you think that like the phrase faith works through love? I think a lot of times we focus on the first thing and we don't understand the highway upon which that gets delivered. When I'm just trying to be right or I'm trying to make my point and I go like truth, my truth error mirror is gone and I've detected error.
Error, error, error.
Perhaps I shouldn't open my mouth and make my statement until I'd have a bit of a heart check that would kind of look at this moment and go like, okay, am I in love here? Am I caring about this person? What am I trying to accomplish in what I'm saying? Do like apples of gold and settings of silver is a right word spoken at the right time, not just the truth spoken anytime.
Right.
And so you just go like, wow.
And not just tagging out the end of it. Oh, I love you with the love of the Lord,
yeah,
by the way.
Just saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like watch just it. Smack you in the mouth. Just saying. And you just go like, golly, I think what I take those words to mean is there's a much more circumspect thing I need to do in my heart that just says, wait, be slow to speak, quick to listen, which we don't do. I don't do.
Yeah, you do sometimes.
But if I want to understand a situation, most of the time when it's like I'm not waiting for the other guy to just take his breath, but I'm actually listening, then I have a much greater capacity to whatever it is that I'm saying, probably it would fit within that category if I'm doing it with a measure of love.
Yeah, and I think mostly you're talking, we're both talking in terms of a fairly healthy relational reality. I think there are exceptions to the abusive personality who's just trying to force their way and hurt people and make accusations. It's a different way to respond to that. It's not necessarily, sometimes just a big stick across the mouth. Oh, I have dreamed of such moments, but that's not it either. Yeah.
So what do we do? So 666, the devil's out there. He's doing
the
stuff.
The devil's out there. Okay, this podcast is over.
No. He's doing stuff. The devil's out there. He's harassing me. What do I do? I've gone through the four things. I get it. He's
humble
doing
yourselves
that.
Under the mighty hand of God and resist the devil, and he will flee from you. I mean, like that's, to me, that's the best scripture in the world to deal with.
Because you're not a big spiritual warfare guy.
That's not true.
Really?
Yeah, that's not true.
Okay.
I don't do it in the charismatic hocus pocus format, or sit in special buildings and rebuke devils and thousands of miles away. But I do when I see the hand of the enemy at work in the life of a person. Yeah, I don't mind dealing with it.
Okay. In terms of how you approach this, because I'm just going like a lot of people listen to this like, okay, that's true. They're giving mental assent. They're nodding. But in terms of how do you go about your day? Are you aware often of the enemy? Are you asking God to help you be aware of, we're not to be ignorant of his schemes. We're just recognize he's got his wiles. He's doing his stuff. There was a season in my life where we were doing a ton of deliverance ministry. And I'm going like, wow, where are all the demons today that were there then when it was a real concerted focus? And we were very effective at what we were doing. It wasn't just a bunch of weird hocus pocus, burp in a bag. You just
burp in a baggie. Okay. Wow. Put in a Ziploc bag so it can't get out. Don't trust them twisty ties when you upchuck a demon. Put it in a Ziploc bag.
Now you're taking it beyond where. But you're just going.
I don't think that's Ziploc bag back, back in pigs in a parlor days.
No, but I looked at a lot of that and I'm going like, wow, for so many people, that moment when it's all of a sudden, wait a minute, this isn't just me. That was such a profound change for them because they were otherwise so full of condemnation and self-loathing and the sense of I can't do anything right kind of stuff. And they didn't recognize there was an actual supernatural agent against them that once it was identified, man, you're able to put a little truth on the inside. They were able to start to receive it and you were able to break the power of what had ruled them. Enslave them to something, and to watch people just their countenance change is extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I go like, wow, because you are so right. There's so much of the world out there that, frankly, they're not aware. They're not cognizant thinking. Yep, there's demons. Because most of it's like, well, that's mental illness stuff, right? Yeah, I mean, it's like you get a shooting.
The natural mind, sure.
Nobody says, oh, there's a devil that wants to kill, steal, and destroy. Nobody's saying that. It's all mental illness, brother. And you just go like, I don't care how much money you throw at mental illness. It's not the same thing as a supernatural being that has a will that it's trying to impose an influence on available, unsuspecting people.
Yeah, not just has a will to impose, actually possess a life and control it, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
And I just...
Do I walk around every day looking to be aware of Satan? The answer is I don't.
Yeah, no. That's why I said I don't think you're a spiritual warfare guy.
So is that what a spiritual warfare guy is?
No. You're right. I'm not. I've bumped into a bunch of people who are spiritual warfare people, and it seems to me they're far more aware of what the devil is doing than they are necessarily what the Lord is. And I sat there going like, golly, the reason I don't like some of that stuff, although I do believe there's biblical basis for some of it, is that I don't want my focus to be on the enemy. I really do want to say, gosh, if my gaze is going to be looking for something, I really want it on the Lord. And yet I know Jesus said, I am here to destroy the works of the devil. That was intentional. He's going after it. He's on the offense, not the defense.
But and the fulfillment of that scripture isn't all spiritual warfare, right? The works of the devil is just not always possession and all that kind of stuff. But so there's lots of works that for me, I want to live my life focused on God, his love, what he's doing in me. But I'm very aware of, particularly when I'm in settings other than my own home, I'm not real all aware of my own home, but when I'm out with people, I'm aware of when I'm talking to somebody and there's some bondage. Am I listening between? Is this just some confusion in their life? Is there a bigger power attached behind this somehow? I'm aware of those things.
Because
I'm listening.
When you don't break some of those things, it's you can spend a lot of time with just seems wasted air because that person's not getting anything.
True. But the other side of that was, I think back in the days when we were doing, had a lot more focus on it as a community of people, there was almost the desire for people to be demonically oppressed or possessed from sins that they had. They wanted to be cast. They want sins to be cast out instead of loved out, instead of transformed. So the focus on that wasn't all healthy. Like I said, I saw a lot of people get free. I mean, my goodness, we went to some demonically influenced households and with manifestations going on that would rival anything you've seen in a Hollywood movie. So I've been in those things. It's been a while since I've been, but I've been in prayer with people and conversation with people, even the last year, where I would sense there's a demonic presence here bigger than
what's going on.
I'll talk to them about it. We'll pray. We'll resist the enemy. I'll do that with people. But what I get an email probably 5-6 times a month. I've been praying. See, though we're talking about last week, I don't feel like God's revealed himself to me, blah. I must be demon possessed. And blah. So then when people go that way, they just go, hold it. Before you go there, get to that desperate place that we talked about before. Get there. To me, that's part of resisting the devil. It doesn't take a specific hocus pocus prayer to cast the devil out, though that can be helpful. However it is that God leads you to resist the enemy's lie, the enemy's temptation, the enemies, whatever, I think that's, Paul said, he has a way of escape for us. And the way of escape is not a principle. It's in this situation with these factors going on around me.
Right.
Here's the pathway. Here's the track. I think of, the lighted tracks in the airplane when it fills up with smoke. They got these lights that I look for situations I'm in. Okay, where's the light leading me to? What's the way out of here?
You know what?
And seek to follow it.
For a lot of people stuck in the tractor beam of temptation.
Yeah.
I've never heard anyone talk about looking for the way out.
Oh, really?
I'm sure some people do, but when I look at what's being said to us in those verses, is that there is one.
Hmm.
There's no temptation that has come against you. That is like, oh, it's just a super bad one for you. It's like, no. It's
no one else is tempted like you are.
Yeah. It's like, this is all pretty common life.
Yeah.
Everybody's going through this.
Yes. People need to know that too.
I know.
Because people would sit in my office. When I was pastoring, people would sit down in my office. And
we make ourselves the exception.
They would come and say, I'm going to tell you something. I need to confess something to you. And I said, I know it makes me horrible. I know there's not a person in this church that deals with the same thing. And I'd say, already I know you're wrong. And they'll go, what? I said, You can tell me anything. I tell you, I got hundreds of people out there that deal with the same thing. I go, what? Because part of that enemy's power is you're the only one dealing with this. And I think part of the pretense of Christianity, everybody's pretending to do better than they are, lends some credibility to that. No one else is struggling with this, just me.
Right.
But yeah.
So I just sort of feel like most of us don't deal with temptation with the already planted hope and promise. There is a way of escape. There is a door that's available to me.
Hmm.
And I bet we might do a little better if, as we walked in life, we recognized there's not a moment where that's not true.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter if it's a temptation, a lie, the feeling of shame, anxiety, fear. It doesn't matter what it is. There is a way, which I was taught growing up, there's a way of escape, which No one told us what it was, so you just assumed, well, it's just, I got to be strong enough, and I got to pray and rebuke the devil.
Which is not the same as a way of escape.
No, it's not. It's
strong,
not saying,
rebuking, and yeah.
It's like if you're in a plane filled with smoke, and hopefully on the ground, and the light track is lying. That's what you're looking for. Where is the light that draws me out of the situation? Because I can do all kinds of things on my own. I can bang on a window that's not an emergency exit. I can run toward a place in the plane that's not toward an exit. I think I'm looking for, in any situation I'm in, whether it's a painful relationship, whether it's temptation, whatever, I'm looking to say, okay, God, there's a way through this. You have a way to get me through this. And so, and I don't get then when I wake up the next morning, there's a map sitting on my desk. Here's the way out.
There's the four steps.
Or I don't see lights, you know, taking me out that doorway. What I do have a sense of, here's the nudge for the next step. Here's the next step. I've learned to live my life there. I used to live praying for God to give me strategies about everything until I wore myself out. Now I'm just looking for 6 inches of light.
What's the next step? Very good.
Yeah, it is.
But you know what's true about every little moment of if the way of escape involves that there's light and illumination? We ought not to fear exposure.
What kind of exposure?
I don't know. I don't think there's a single light that has shined anywhere that the effect of light does not reveal, does not expose.
Oh, things that people don't want revealed?
Yeah, I sort of feel like we don't recognize that as a potential doorway. You know? And why? Because I think we're heap loads of shame on us, and so we're afraid, so we got to stay in the closet. And I know that transparency is a good thing.
I agree.
You're thinking, you got, there's motives.
No, I agree. I think, but to the flesh, it's a scary thing.
I know.
To the spirit, it's a great thing. Whatever. That's what I found myself. I said on this recent podcast I did for someone else about betrayal that I remember saying to God when we were being lied about by a group of people.
God, which is so fun.
Yeah, it is fun. God, if what they're saying is true, because I think I'm following you.
Right.
If I'm wrong, I want you to shout it from the house. If they're right, if I am as independent and as rebellious as they're saying I am, show me.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what I want to know. And I think desperation will get you to that spot. It's not, I don't want to just look good here.
Right.
I want to find my way into your reality.
I want
your
what's
freedom.
Real.
Yeah.
And I think if we're afraid of one, what others think, or two, our stuff being exposed. I mean, this is the crazy thing. I got an email that got sent to me that says, your email has been hacked.
And you read an email. That's amazing right there. You read an email.
Yeah, I know. The greater works have begun. This is 2019. Remember? Double portion.
Wow. You got an email.
I got an email.
And they videotaped you doing some things with your computer.
You got the same email.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, wow. I got this email. And at first I'm looking at it like, what? And I'm reading through this and I'm just going like, that did happen. That's not true. That's ridiculous. And there was not a single moment of where, you know how when you get caught in someone, you know there's something that comes on your face and you feel horrible. Okay?
Yeah.
This email, I'm reading it and I'm just kind of going like, what? Because I'm just going like, that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And you're threatening me and you want money. And wow, if that was true, or if that could be true, I'd be cooked. That'd be really terrible.
Yeah, if you read through that email and go, ooh, I've done that.
That's going to feel terrible.
When I got the email, I said, you know, I told Sarah, the best thing about not doing that is
that I'm not scared of that email.
Yeah, email's just not going to hit anything.
But I just sat there going like, oh, this is crazy.
The other thing, I've been covering my cameras for years. If I'm not using my camera, it's covered. Simply because I don't want the NSA looking in on my life,
sure.
My wife, my anything.
Sure. But I mean, I looked at that and I just sat there going like, you know what's the best, safest protection is truth, light, the reality that just says, you know what? That didn't happen. Your little scary voice there, your little threat, right. Your accusation, not true. Nothing to fear. I'm going like, okay. What could they send out? Because I wasn't just instantly going like, oh, this is just stupid. I sat there going like, okay, wow.
Lots of voices.
Okay. I went, what is this? And okay, maybe they can get into my computer. That sucks. How do I know what to do? It's like, if you tell anybody, we're going to send it. And you just go like, okay, wow, the web of lies, deceit, and you could get stuck in that. And you just go like, if you had been guilty, oh my gosh, what would that do to you? And I'm sitting there going like, it's the same way of escape. Go to the light. Tell the truth. Get free from it. If you did it, if you're guilty.
If you did it.
Quickly agree with your accuser. Nobody likes doing that.
Right.
But it is the quickest way out.
Which Jesus says too, right? People don't love the light if your deeds are evil.
Right.
You don't find the light a warm, wonderful place to live in.
No, we find it painful, exposing, humiliating.
But if you want the light, if you want to be God's kid in the earth, then we've got to cultivate a passion for the light.
Absolutely.
Even when that exposes something in us that's not pretty.
And if I look at this life as the womb of my eternal calling and the time that I have in which to sort of be transformed, I don't have to fear any of those moments that I'm so afraid of. I can actually welcome them going like, if I don't deal with it now, when is it going to get transformed? And how am I going to be really changed? And I want to be changed. I think a lot of people are going like, well, I don't want the exposure. I'm going like, I do. I won't enjoy it when it happens and by the person that does it. I will probably resist that.
Right. Yeah.
Thinking they're the devil.
Yeah.
But if I recognize that light always exposes, and if it's coming from the Lord, his goal is to change me, not to harm me, not to do, he's not there to humiliate me. I mean,
but all your friends around you are.
No, they may.
That's the danger. Yeah, that's the danger.
Okay, but.
But I agree. You got to have a passion for the light.
But then whose voice am I looking for? And who's the judge of my life that I actually care about? That's him.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.